Hello.
Bad time again?
Yes.
No.
Addison was telling another story.
Jeez. Addison is quite the storyteller.
Do you think of it as having a conversation?
It depends. Are people replying to you, or are you just monologuing?
I mean, I'm replying to someone else's.
Well, that could be conversational, sure.
No other conversation.
Okay. Well, welcome to week 815 of the Crankcast. And here we are.
Hi.
I was just watching a bad movie that seems like it'd be something you'd be watching, Mike.
What would that be?
It was called Pungo, A Witch's Tale.
Pongo?
Pungo.
Pungo?
P-U-N-G-O. Apparently it's someplace in Virginia. That
what?
A witch was drowned, and then 300 years later, the governor or the mayor pardoned her in 2006 or something like that.
Was she still alive?
Damn it!
Well, sort of. In this movie, she is. Kind of, sort of.
She's a burned-out ex-Navy SEAL and an emotionally damaged firefighter.
No, those are the two handymen that are working on the witch's house.
Okay.
But when did this movie come out?
Recently.
No.
I think.
I wish he said Congo, A Witch's Tale.
Congo, that gorilla was a witch. What was her name?
The gorilla?
That gorilla's name was not Pongo.
Was it Congo? No.
Kinga.
I don't know.
We're all here, Crank.
Hi. Paul?
Well, not all.
Aw.
Who's not here?
Jim.
Oh, Jim's never here. Was Jim here when Josh was here?
I don't know.
Really? Oh, I can't remember.
Not frequently.
It's been so long.
I miss Jim's serialized stories about celebrities lost in the woods.
Oh, right, yeah. That was a
fun
time. Too busy marveling that there's sunlight at night in Alaska.
Yeah, Alaska?
Yeah.
Oh, happy times.
Jim's in Alaska?
Yeah.
Did he move?
No. He's there with his sister for something.
Oh, okay.
And,
it's a tribal.
Yeah, it's some kind of tribal cooking thing, actually.
What?
Because his sister's a chef.
Oh, yeah. I learned that from his book.
So, something like that. But yes, in true I've never been anywhere fashion, he is marveling at how it doesn't get dark there.
Is he quoting the I Wear My Sunglasses at Night song?
No. I mean, he should be, but he's not.
Because, I mean, he probably is wearing his sunglasses at night.
So he can what?
Get around?
No, that's not the word. That's not.
Anywho.
What do you want, Craig?
I was looking at other movies that the director of Pungo, A Witch's Tale, directed. I guess he did some stuff back in the 80s.
Like? Who's the director?
Philip Cook.
Hmm.
He did, I think these are the same movie with different names. Outer World and or Beyond the Rising Moon.
Oh, yes, they are the same movie, and they're very boring.
One's like 20 minutes longer.
It's seriously about corporations fighting over the land deed of a planet.
Sounds exciting.
Yeah.
Actually, it kind of...
It's very similar. It's kind of similar to the plot of to Mass Effect, because they find this like ancient civilization wreck that gives them the technology for light speed.
The ancient civilization's name is great.
Yeah.
What's that one guy that makes some really good movies?
Martin Scorsese.
People.
No. The guy
who's
like, he lives in Vegas and he's like a realtor.
Neil Breen?
Yeah. The plot you described sounds like it could be a Neil Breen movie, but it's like one of those where you're like, don't know that's the plot until the very end.
Oh, so that's what it was about.
Anyway.
No. The Neil Breen movie would be they find an ancient alien civilization and it was a hacker.
He is, no. He's not that clever. He tells you from the very beginning that he is the ancient civilization and only he can change the world.
From ancient civilization.
You know, half of the fucking Trump speeches in the last 4 years sounded like Neil Breen.
It's all about real estate.
Real estate.
What's he doing? What's he doing during a pandemic?
That's a good question. Okay. I hope he didn't go outside, because that dude has got to be like 75. I hope he's got a hip surgery, because he was looking rough in that last movie.
Like, every photo of Neil Breen is from that purple tree from Twisted Paradise.
Oh, right, yeah. And his weird dyed haircut. How old do you think he is? He's got to be 60-something, right? At least. What?
Like, this photo is... I think he just photoshopped it a lot. But he looks like he just
vamped
out.
I don't think Neil does Photoshop. I think Neil has like a guy that does Photoshop for him. Or maybe he does. Maybe he is doing all those effects in his own movie.
He's got all these computers.
Yeah.
From Salvation Army.
That's true. He does do that weird thing in the credits of his movies where he has all these fake names that are actually him.
Oh, yeah, if it has a capital N or a capital B.
Yeah. That is such a bizarre thing to do, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, no, it's super weird.
Why did I open that in Photos? Damn it.
Now it'll be saved forever?
It's that way. You just click on that.
Oh. Oh, yeah. That, holy shit!
What is going on there?
That is...
Also, I know this is great radio, but...
I think this absolutely was... I hate to think that somebody actually physically did that to him. Oh, man, they went overboard with the Photoshop. He looks like if Odo tried to transform into Neil Breen. Is Neil Breen one of the Dominion? The Dominion are the Odo's people, right? Or are they the lizard soldiers?
Well, spoilers, but yes.
Okay. Yeah, I know, it's a spoiler. Well, then what are the lizard people called? The soldiers that they have, that everybody was fighting. I thought those were the Dominion.
The Dominion is like their whole collective. Right?
Oh, okay.
They are like they're the overseers or something like that.
Okay.
I don't know. Deep Space Nine sucks.
Whoa! That was my favorite one.
No, you're right.
That pretty much was the best one. Yeah. Even taking into account the whole prophecy God thing and stuff, or Savior thing.
Oh yeah, that was supposed to be Sisko.
Yeah.
Sisko. Sisko is the one.
But even taking that into account, yeah, it was still the best of the newer Star Trek series.
Neil Breen being one of the Dominion really fits into his whole worldview, though.
Yeah. The Founders. That's what
the Founders. He's one. That sounds like something in one of Neil Breen's movies.
That's what I'm saying. He's where Star Trek.
Oh, he is. He's a Founder.
Hmm.
So
it's
the good one.
Star Trek?
Yeah.
Probably Next Generation, but the original series is pretty good.
Of the new ones.
The 90s
series.
Oh. Everything's back to normal.
Chaos. I'm not sure what's going on.
Yeah, that's back to normal.
It's like a stream of consciousness thought. thing going on here.
And options. It's just Deep Space Nine and Voyager, right?
So how you doing?
Oh, I'm doing all right.
Next year.
Apparently, this Philip Cook also directed another movie that's either from 89 or 92, depending on where you look, but it's called Invaders, and it was like an alien conspiracy movie or something. And more recently, he's done a series of movies based on a character called Malice.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Yeah. I haven't seen any of those. There's a couple of them, right?
Several, yeah. I think they were web movies or something.
Yeah, they look like the kind of movies I watch. But
I think I had them in my queue at one point, but then I previewed one and said, nah.
Crank, I have a problem.
Oh?
That I've watched a lot of movies.
Yeah?
And I did it on Tubi without logging in, so now I have no record of what movies I saw, and I cannot remember them.
Oh, no.
If I can't log them, can I say I've seen them? I don't know if I can.
Good question.
It's messing with my brain.
I found myself having that problem occasionally when I'll start watching a movie and realize I've seen it before, because Amazon didn't keep track of me watching it for some reason.
Well, Amazon doesn't keep track of it.
Sure, you got a watch list.
You have a watch list, yeah, but it doesn't tell you if you're watching it that you've seen it before.
No, you have I have seen this list on Amazon.
Yeah, but you have to go looking for that.
I've just got it bookmarked, but I mean, it's in your account. Like,
so you do that before you watch every movie?
No. Most of the time I just look, because the problem is okay, like some movies I watched like 5 years ago and Amazon still remembers, because you can see where it says watch again, or you can see like in the progress bar how far you made. Like when you preview it or whatever. But sometimes I guess it's because they take them off of the catalog and somebody else resubmits them, like another company gets the rights to them or something. And so they'll put the movies back on, but they're not, like, I guess they don't have the same catalog, Amazon catalog number anymore. So they don't remember that I watched them already. And so I found myself occasionally watching movies or starting to watch movies and then getting about halfway through and go, I know this movie, I've seen it already.
Well, speaking of this, I just pulled up, this is weird, I just had my phone on, and Mystery Science Theater just tweeted, if you could see any movie, get the MST3K treatment, what movie would you love to see riffed?
I don't know. There's so many.
Yeah, I know, there are.
Do they, I mean, occasionally they do movies that aren't mystery or science fiction, right? Do they do mystery movies? I mean, I don't think I've ever seen them do a mystery movie.
Yeah, they've done old black and white ones.
I guess that was way back in the beginning.
Yeah, they did them all throughout. But I mean, they did a German version of Hamlet.
But, like, they've never done, say, like, Zack and Miri make a porno or something. Yeah.
No, they don't. They won't do stuff with nudity in it.
Oh, well, that makes sense. But have they done comedies?
Well, not nudity that's bigger than Tom Servo.
Yeah.
Like, Servo can flip in front of his bits.
Have they done what, did you say?
Like, have they done comedies? Because it seemed like it would be redundant to make jokes at a comedy.
Catalina Caper is a comedy.
Oh, okay.
But no, it isn't. They haven't done comedies so much.
Yeah, it just seems like it would be sort of, I don't know, not funny at that point? Like, because they're doubling down?
My experience is bad comedy is just fucking painful. It's not fun to watch at all.
That's true.
So,
I just realized I've got, like, no concept of what makes a good Mystery Science Theater movie. Like, before the, like, because I'm like, well, what are some of my favorite movies? And I'm like, no, that would be a horrible thing to rent. And I think, well, what are some of the worst movies I've seen? It's like, well, no, those would all just be painful to watch. They're just bad. There's this middle zone.
Yeah, I mean.
Well, I mean, they've done a lot that are painful to watch, even with them making fun of it.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at those first couple of seasons, and
genuinely trying and just failing.
Yeah.
And slightly incoherent.
Incoherent's good. If it, I mean, that goes under the failing, because that's ineptitude. That's the inability to tell that you can't, that you're not even telling your own story.
Right. Yeah.
And I don't think it can be, how do I want to say, like, boringly bad? I think it's got to have, like, an obviously ridiculous element to it. Although I've seen them do boring movies, too, over the years. Like, that are just, they're bad, but they're just boring bad. Like, not remarkably bad.
Yeah.
I feel like it has to be ridiculous, but not necessarily know that it's ridiculous. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's the genuine part. They've done, I mean, Rip Trax has done more, but they've done a lot of Italian movies because of that.
Right.
Italian and Spanish movies, Mexican movies.
The Ator movies.
Oh, yeah, Ator.
Yeah.
Were the Gore movies, were those, though? No, I think those are American. Those are American.
Was that the one with the guy that traveled to the other universe?
Yeah, Outlaw is what it's called, but there's two of them.
Right, yeah, a sequel.
Like book series.
Oh boy, have they done Battle of the Planets?
They have not done Battle of the Planets.
I wonder
if that costs money.
That would be a fun one to watch. With with them doing it. Yeah.
I'm gonna reply to this.
Or what was that one? Is it Forbidden Galaxy? What was one where the aliens were giving people like nightmares and killing them off?
That's Galaxy of Terror.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And it has a worm rape scene in it, so no.
Oh, right. Forgot. So that would, that would probably cut out the Evil Dead movies, too, then.
Probably.
And Army of Darkness is already ridiculous, so there's no point.
I mean, Rip Trax did Jack Frost.
Oh, yeah.
And they cut out the rape scene, so. There's a snowman rape scene in that.
How do I know he's evil?
Well, for one thing, he tells you he's evil.
Yeah.
What is that other movie where the kid gets on the spaceship with these space pirates?
Oh.
Ice Pirates?
No.
No, Ice Pirates would be a great one also.
What is that called?
Message? No.
I can't recall. Yeah?
What is that called?
Oh, I would also give a lot to see them direct by Time Bandits.
I don't know how I feel about that.
I don't like that movie, but it is good.
Also, you're wrong, but...
What? I just said it was good. He just told me I was wrong.
No, you're wrong if you don't like it. Oh, okay. It's good and you like it.
Wait, how can you be wrong if you don't like... What? For me, that would be like... What was it? Like when Rift Tracks did Fist of Fury.
Yeah.
And I didn't like it, because, I mean, I actually like that movie. Even though I know it's ridiculous.
A lot of movies that are, like, they do all the Star Wars movies and all the Indiana Jones and stuff.
Rift Tracks?
Rift Tracks does, yeah.
Yeah. Because they can just play it in parallel.
Oh, right. I was thinking Mr. Sensei said that.
Right, well, I kind of conflate the two of them, because, I mean...
They are different.
They are, but for obvious reasons, I...
Subjects that they do. Because Rift Tracks will do anything.
And I mean... Anything.
Yeah, give them a dollar.
Exactly.
Rift Tracks will do MSD3K.
Ooh, what would that be like?
Well, we will see later this year.
Oh, that's going to happen?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It already has happened. They did it on tour.
Oh, one of the live ones, yeah, when they had new people on. Or the new people on. I think I saw that on, whatchamacallit.
Yeah, I saw it at the theater, like the one of those simulcast things.
Oh, I wasn't that cool. No, I saw it later on Amazon.
What's another good one?
I don't know. Vicious Lips?
Vicious Lips is actually a good one, but it's, I hate that movie. It's so hard to follow. It's so dumb.
Good old Albert Putin. Okay. Anyway.
Okay. What's that Albert Pune robot movie with Rutger Hauer in it?
Oh.
Is that like Omega or something like that?
Yeah, like he's a bounty hunter or something, isn't he?
Yeah. Rutger Hauer Omega. Omega Doom. It's so stupid.
Omega Doom. Bracka Doom.
Bracka Doom.
Yeah, so it's kind of a tough call. I'd just rather they choose and let me watch it.
Yep.
You know.
Very true. So true. So true.
Too hard for me to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Probably. Have they ever done that that witchy movie with David Hasselhoff?
Witchery?
Yeah, I think that's what it was called.
That's a good idea. I think it's called The Witchery.
Because, I mean, that was a terribly ridiculous movie.
Oh, have they done The Wicker Man remake?
Riff Trax did, yes.
The one with
and it's pretty funny.
Nick Cage?
Yeah. What you got in the bag, a shark or something?
And then he punches it.
You got a shark in there?
No.
They never tell you what's in the bag, do they?
Probably the bee reserve, because they don't want to use all their bees at once.
Bees,
the bees.
No. Surely they've probably done like Night of the Lepus before, right?
Riff Trax has.
Okay. Or
Yeah, it's hard to watch.
Yeah, I don't like live bunny killing.
Because I'm like, they are for sure murdering those bunnies.
Yeah, the beginning is just footage of...
I think that was news footage, actually.
What?
I think that was news footage, the beginning.
Yeah, it's stock footage.
Because they had to, I mean, that was a real event that happened.
You're a real event that happened.
Wait, what?
Yeah, there was a population explosion, and the rabbits were causing, like, a bunch of ecological problems, so they just sent people out to go round them up and kill them. I think that was back in the late 70s? Mid 70s?
Night of the Lepus is based on a true story.
Oh, no. Night of the Lepus is documentary, actually.
Yeah, that's actually a real documentary.
Yeah. People like to think it's just a movie because it makes them feel better at night, but man, them bunnies are evil.
Evil bunnies.
And that was a recurring joke in Buffy with Anya.
It's, what's the bunny movie?
Better Sit Down?
Yeah.
Oh.
Mystery Science Theater does Watership Down.
God. That's such a depressing movie.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even think jokes could make that less depressing.
Yeah.
Same thing with Plague Dogs.
What?
Plague Dogs, the movie. Mm-hmm. Animated, about the dogs.
Oh, no, I'm not going to watch that.
I think that was also written by Adams, the guy that wrote Watership Down.
Hmm.
Anywho.
Anywho.
I'm reading a coffee table book that's called Graphic, and it's basically just a collection of designer sketchbooks, like snippets of sketchbooks.
Yeah.
Sounded like a toy machine gun.
Alright.
And it's pretty interesting. It's neat looking at all these different sketchbooks from professional people. I guess, you know, people being paid. And some of them are, you know, like highly acclaimed professionals.
Like who?
Like the guy that designed the I Heart New York logo thing.
Oh.
Stuff like that. I saw Nathan Fox in there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and the funny thing was, is one of the pages from the sketchbook had a drawing by Ryan Stegman on it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I thought that was funny. But it's kind of neat to look at because, you know, how do I want to say it? Like a lot of, at least comic artists, a lot of comic artists' sketchbooks don't really seem all that sketchy to me a lot of times. It's like what people call warm-ups, but they're really like finished pieces.
Yeah,
yeah. Because they're all
wires. Right. Which, I mean, you know, if you don't know any better and that's all you ever see, that can be kind of scary because you're looking at that and you're like, man, their sketches are just way beyond any level I could get to, kind of thing, or whatever. You
know? Here's my slightly unfinished drawings.
Yeah, and they present you with, like, a framed piece. But this actually presents, you know, a lot of people just use sketchbooks as actual sketchbooks, just to jot down notes or sketch out ideas or whatever. And, I mean, there's some of these in here that are, like, finished-looking kind of stuff or really high-level stuff, but there's a lot of stuff that just looks like scribbles and stuff, too.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of encouraging to look at this because, you know, you look at that and you go, well, you know, I could do that kind of thing. It doesn't make you scared off or disheartened or anything.
I don't want you to look at my sketchbooks and you'll know my secrets.
It's neat, too, to see, especially when you're looking at working sketchbooks, I'd like to see people's thought processes behind, like, how they developed something else, you know? Just sort of what goes on in the subconscious, I guess.
I have to go talk to my tax lady.
Good luck. Do you all keep sketchbooks?
I haven't in a while, but I used to.
I keep one on my iPad.
Most of my sketches are, it's almost like comedy writing. It's mostly jokes and just stupid, jokey drawings.
Right on. I've started a couple of times to try to keep a sketchbook, but then I just look at it and I go, nah. Because, you know, I've talked before how I don't have a big love of doing a bunch of thumbnails before I do a project or anything. I like to kind of just dive in and work it out as I'm going along. And it kind of feels like, I don't know what I do. It feels like I'm doubling the work when I try to do a thing in a sketchbook instead. I mean, sometimes I've worked stuff out on paper and then scanned it and used that, you know. But generally, that's just, to me, that's more part of the work process than just kind of noodling around on in a book. But I don't know, after reading about halfway through this and, you know, after seeing all these, I'm kind of thinking maybe I should start keeping one again.
I mean, that's up to you.
Yeah, it is. And most of it's accessibility, too. I mean, you gotta be comfortable with having it around and stuff.
Yeah, I was doing it, and one of two things. One is, like, I don't really feel like drawing when I'm done drawing.
Right.
And I used to feel guilty about that.
Because, like, you weren't putting stuff into it?
Yeah, it's like, oh, I'm not dedicated enough to drawing my sketchbook. And then there's all these other guys that do keep sketchbooks, and they keep them pretty regular, and then they'll post their stuff. And then it dawned on me, it's like, oh, these are the guys that don't draw every fucking day on a deadline.
Right.
They're the ones that turn in like 3 pages a week, that kind of thing. So I didn't feel so bad after that.
It's go ahead.
And the other thing was, I had that that kind of insecurity about my sketches looking like sketches.
Right.
I mean, they're real messy and ugly looking.
And that seems to be the thing that I'm noticing in common with the people that have real loose sketchbooks. Because, like, for one thing, half of it will be, like, written notes and, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And then also some sketches or, like, outlines of a design, like a page design or something like that. Mm-hmm. And, like, when they talk about each artist in this book, they just got a brief paragraph explaining who they are and what they think of their sketch process or whatever. And the ones that have the looser stuff basically just say, yeah, it's just for me to kind of jot down notes and basically remember stuff. I don't really use it to try to, like, as the actual springboard for the finished design or whatever.
Yeah. I used to do it a lot more than I do now. Also, I have half-started sketchbooks all over my house.
And that was another funny thing, especially with some of the older designers. They're talking about how, you know, like, they've been keeping sketchbooks since, like, 1973 or something.
Yeah.
And I've got 150 of them. I'm like, where do you keep them all, you know? That's a lot of sketchbooks to have around.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the stuff, I didn't have enough. I would put them in the ones that I printed out to sell. Mm-hmm. But even those, a lot of those were just layouts that I did for actual real work.
Right. I don't know. Yeah. Because I used to noodle on paper a lot more before I got a... Well, obviously, you know, before computers became more accessible and art programs and stuff. I had to, because I didn't have a choice. But even at that, though, I think I worked out stuff more on paper before I got comfortable using a stylus on a computer. Either a tablet, separate tablet, or now that I work on a monitor.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I wasn't real comfortable using a stylus, especially with a tablet where I had that disconnect between where my hand was and what my eye was seeing, I just wasn't real comfortable sketching stuff out that way. If I needed to do a logo design or something, and I was trying to figure out ideas or something. But, and I guess I still sort of sketch, because when I'm trying to develop something, like I'll run through iterations of it, like in Illustrator, and then whatever I don't use, I kind of shove off to the side, off the artboard. So I, you know, I guess that's sort of sketching in a way.
I was never good at like doing like just like the random like doodle sketches or like thumbnails.
Yeah.
And it finally took an artist who I was kind of talking with, not like a full-on like mentor type thing, but just like just getting like advice and stuff. And he kind of just suggests finally to just think of each like sketch. As you're like really working towards the final piece in one drawing, like not doing like lots of different versions like some people do in sketchbooks. It was just like, just focus on that one drawing, like that one scene, and kind of build it up.
I was sort of using thumbnails to refine a single idea as opposed to coming up with alternates or whatever.
Yeah, well, not even really doing thumbnails, just like doing, you know, taking that single drawing as far as you want.
I gotcha.
And deciding if you want to do like a finished piece based off of it, but still kind of just treat it as a exploratory drawing. You're kind of like changing things as you go.
Sort of dovetailing into that, another common theme I've seen, or a recurring theme anyway, that I read in this book so far amongst different people is that, especially the ones with the looser stuff, is they don't feel like, or how I want to say this, it's kind of like how I approach doing audio recording, where like it's really hard if you capture something in a demo or a sketch, like a certain energy, it's really hard to keep working on that again on a separate thing to do a proper version of it, you know, like you lose some of that energy.
For sure, yeah.
And that seems to pop up as a thing.
I know some illustrators where all they do is they just like sit all day and they'll like, you know, have all like their inspiration, and then they'll just do drawings, and then they'll kind of come to the end of that day, or like then the next day, they like keep all the ones that they liked. And those ones they liked, they'll then like put tracing paper over and then like refine that drawing. And then once they refine it, they'll like refine it again with tracing paper. And it keeps building up until they have their like final piece.
Right.
They weren't like seeking, like they didn't have an idea of what that final piece was going to be. I mean, in those cases, it's a little bit more fine art, but, I mean, those lines have been blurring more and more lately.
Well, yeah, and I mean, Mike brought up a good point, too, that, I mean, the people that have the time to do that obviously aren't having to hit a daily deadline quota kind of thing. Yeah. They've got the time to noodle around and refine something, like, until they're happy with it, instead of just making a, you know, at-the-moment decision and moving on.
But still, I mean, in that same stage, you know, some of them will do, like, 20 drawings in a day.
Yeah. And sometimes it's hard to compare work because, you know, I don't know. And like, if you're looking at a comic page, do you count each panel as a drawing? Or is the whole thing overall as a drawing, you know?
You should count it overall, but a lot of people do it like that.
Because, I mean, to say, like, somebody drew, because essentially you are, if you've got a six-panel page, you're doing six different compositions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You are.
So, I mean, that's more like somebody doing six different drawings, even though your panels may not be as detailed as a, like, you know, 11:17 canvas of one single thing or something. But you're still having to, you're having to use your brain to compose this. So it's
mm-hmm.
kind of one of those weird, you know, how do you really compare them one to the next? And it's not quite apples and oranges or anything, but it's definitely, like, and even saying that, you know, I'm not trying to, like, discount people who keep working on the same thing for several days. Like how you were talking about, keep refining a drawing. Because, I mean, you're still doing work. You're spending the same amount of time doing some sort of work. It's just your final output's not as great as somebody that's, you know, doing a page a day and moving on kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like a parent. And I guess that just goes to show that the work put in is not necessarily indicative of the apparent output of a thing or of an artist. So I'm not really sure where I was going on with that. But sketchbooks.
Sketch.
Let's do a sketchbook challenge.
What?
I don't know. Let's all start doing sketchbooks and stick to them and do a sketch a day?
Dude, I'm trying to make myself practice guitar every day. Now you want me to do that?
Okay, we skip it. Sounds like work anyway. I mean, literally, it sounds like work. How's the guitar playing coming along?
No, it's alright.
You learn any Yngwie licks yet?
No.
Satriani?
I'm still not. I was describing it to Josh, who I don't know where he went. I guess he's on another meeting. I was describing it to him in video game terms because it feels like I'm going and doing all the side quests before I do the main thing.
Oh.
Because all I do is seem to, like, do exercises and licks and stuff like that, but I'm not learning a lot of songs.
Right.
So I don't really have a lot to show for it. But hopefully at some point when I do decide to do the main story, I'll be way overpowered and find it ridiculously easy.
I was having sort of a similar thought the other day. I had to take my mom to the hospital for an injection thing. It was one of those things where they won't let you drive home afterwards. Mm. And so I was sitting in the car for like 45 minutes or an hour or whatever out in the parking lot waiting for her. And I was just listening to stuff on the radio and that, and I think it was like a Rory Gallagher song came on.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember thinking, like, when I first heard Rory Gallagher, I don't know, 20 years ago or something, 15, 20 years ago, that, like, wow, I can't picture how he's doing that. You know, it's hard. That seems like it'd be hard to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was listening to it the other day, and I'm like, I was kind of figuring out in my head. I didn't have a guitar with me, so I was just thinking it out.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized, oh, you know, that's how he probably does that. It's not that hard. It just sounds hard.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just sort of reinforcing what you're saying about building up your arsenal before you dive into a thing and finding out that stuff's actually easier than you would have thought it was.
Yeah, we'll see. I feel like I should know more. I've done it for over a year now.
Yeah, well, I mean...
You should have more to show for.
I mean, I guess a year's a good chunk of time, but it's...
Oh, guess what my friend Ron got me for my birthday?
A guitar?
No.
Oh, a coin?
He got me a one-hour lesson with Marty Wilson Piper.
Drawing a blank. Who's Marty Wilson Piper?
He's the guitarist for the church.
Oh, wow.
Well, he used to be. He hasn't been in the church for a while. But he was one of the original members.
So is he on, like the old 80s albums?
Yeah, all the beginning stuff he's on.
Oh, okay.
He didn't leave until recently, but relatively recently.
Oh, okay. Well, that's cool. I'm guessing this is like an online thing?
Yeah, I guess he does songwriting and guitar lessons on his website, and he got one for me. But now I have to, like, get in touch with him on Skype, which I left a message for him, but he hasn't gotten back to me.
Oh, so this is going to be an actual live, like, one-on-one thing.
Yeah.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
Nerve-wracking.
Yeah, that seems like it'd be weird, especially if it was a band you liked, because then
yeah, right?
How it's do you like, concentrate on the lesson, right?
Hey, can you teach me Bel Air?
Yeah.
Show me how you play that one song. You know, you guys are awesome.
Like, dude, do you know who you are?
Yeah, so that was pretty cool.
That's
definitely
neat.
One of the nicer gifts somebody's got me.
That's neat that he does stuff like that. Not your friend, yeah. Not your friend, the guitar player from the church.
Well, I mean, he's not in the church anymore.
Still.
He lives in Portugal now?
Yeah.
So I have to, I mean, I guess it's not much different than England where I take that monthly lesson from as it is.
And that was pretty cool, Ron, too.
Ron's a good guy. Known him for a million years.
Yeah. You'll have to tell me how that goes once you do it.
Oh, well. I figured, yeah, I was like, I need to tell somebody. And then I was like, nobody knows who the fucking church is. Nobody even care about this.
I wasn't even placing the guy's name off the top of my head.
He's the one, if there was a 12-string part in it, he did it. He was the guy. I think Peter Copes did all, like, the lead kind of stuff.
Who was, wasn't there somebody in there named Gilby? No.
Steve Gilby is the singer.
Okay, I guess that's what I was thinking of, yeah.
He's the bass player singer.
Gilby, right, okay, gotcha.
Gilby.
Anyway, wow.
Pretty neat. Hey, teach me how to play under the Milky Way. Teach me how to play the bagpipe part of Under the Milky Way. You know the bagpipes being played in reverse? Can you teach me how to do that?
On the guitar?
On the guitar?
Forward? I've got a patch on one of my processors that, it's supposed to be like I made it up out of a reverse reverb patch.
Uh-huh.
And a little bit of distortion, and when you play a guitar through it, it kind of sounds like a bagpipe.
Oh, cool.
So, anyway, that was fun. Yeah, so. I was thinking about learning some Iron Maiden songs.
I'm not that good yet.
Well, that's the thing. I was actually thinking about trying to learn the drums to some Iron Maiden songs, but the thing about Iron Maiden that was great was even though Steve Harris was a super active bass player and, like, really present in the songs and in the mixes, his bass lines weren't that hard.
They aren't?
Not really.
They seem really fast to be playing with your fingers.
The hardest part about learning a Steve Harris song, at least back in the day, because apparently he doesn't gallop as much anymore, but was learning how to do that three-fingered gallop.
Yeah.
Because you can do a gallop with two fingers, but it tires you out really fast, you know? Wears your hand out, and you start losing the rhythm after a while. But learning how to do that three-finger gallop was probably the hardest thing I had to do, but once you got that down, the rest of his bass lines, I mean, they were pretty straightforward. He had, like, nice little fills and stuff that he would do. Usually, though, you could hear them well enough that they weren't that hard to learn. So, but I'm thinking probably the drums are going to be a lot harder for me to learn. because Nicky McBrain was really good. I mean, I guess he is still really good, but considering he didn't even start using a double bass until like pretty late in their career, most of all that bass drum work is being done with 1 foot.
1 foot.
Yeah. So that's tough. But unlike the old days when I had to learn songs in real time, I can actually take a song and slow it down now.
Have you seen those foot pedals that control your YouTube?
No.
You plug them into your computer and you can slow down or go back or go forward with a foot pedal. So it's made for guitar players to learn.
Huh, that's a really handy thing.
Yeah.
I didn't know you could actually manipulate YouTube to that extent.
You can slow stuff down.
Oh, that's right. They have a button where you can take it to like half speed or three quarter speed or whatever, right?
Yeah.
I forgot about that. I usually just pop WAV files into an audio program or something and just stretch them. But, fun. Learning things is fun, Mike. Just remember that.
Yeah, it can be.
Just remember that, Mike.
Yeah, I'll be remembering that this weekend.
Yeah. What's this weekend?
Nothing.
Is that the lesson?
No.
Oh. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So did anything exciting happen during Julie's time on jury duty?
No, it was a very gross trial, actually.
Oh.
She didn't want to be there. It was like a very heinous crime.
Yikes.
Yeah.
We'll say no more.
Luckily, it only took like 2 days.
Oh.
They were. Like, the defense was doing very little. Because it's like, they even knew.
There is no defense. That would suck if you kept, like, being probably a court-appointed defender kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
When... especially if you were handed lots and lots of cases where you just knew that there's no way I could defend this, but they expect you to try anyway.
Yeah, it would be tough, I would think.
I mean, that's got to be demoralizing. And I'm guessing people...
I'm guessing that most of these people don't get into that business to defend guilty people, right?
Right, that's what I was going to say. I mean, I'm sure a lot of them have, like, you know, high ideals where they're getting in to defend the people who can't afford to be defended kind of thing, like the innocent people. Mm-hmm. The wrongly accused.
I would guess there are way more people that actually did it. So it's probably a pretty crappy job.
Yeah. That sucks.
I mean, yeah. Yeah, it's tough because then at the same time you get the people who get such crappy defenses that they end up guilty even though they're innocent.
Well, you gotta imagine with a public defender, they get so worn down that it gets hard for them to actually muster the enthusiasm for defense.
Yeah.
I wonder what the turnover is on that.
There's gotta be a pretty decent burnout rate. I can't imagine people want to be doing that for, like, their entire lives. That seems like one of those, like, kind of crap jobs you get into to, like, kind of earn your spurs and then move on.
Mm-hmm.
Although, I don't know, maybe not. I mean, there are people, like, public workers, or what do you call them? You know, people that help people. I can't think of the word I'm looking for. Like, but anyway, yeah, I mean... there are people that do that their entire lives, so maybe you just have to have the right mindset for it.
Mm-hmm.
Did I know that the church put out a new album in 2017?
They were going for a long time. I haven't listened to a lot of them because I hate to say it, but they all got kind of, you know,
wishy-washy.
not wishy, but it just all sounded like shit you'd have on in the background in a heroin den or something. You know, it's like, I can't, only so much I can listen to this. Before, I mean, they used to be like songs, like poppy songs. Well, you know what I mean. They were poppy-ish.
Well, I mean, they did hit a point, though, like probably, what, after Gold Afternoon Fix?
That's exactly when I stopped.
Because, yeah, it looks like Priest Aura came out in 92, and I remember that one, a feeling like that was different.
Yeah, I did not care much for Priest equals Aura.
And I know I listened to a couple of the things that came out, like they had a couple albums out in like 2002, 2003, 2004.
Yeah. You know what? After Priest equals Aura, they started sounding more like Steve Kilby solo albums. Because his albums were always very, you know, experimental and, you know, weird.
That could have been the thing where maybe he just said, all right, this is how we're going to do it now. Like,
well, I think that's around the time that Marty left. I don't know if that made a big difference, but, you know, they didn't have, I think the original drummer came back. But, you know, when I saw them, they had a couple extra members.
Yeah, they lost, let's see, they lost somebody in 90 and then they lost somebody else around 93 that left. And Peter Copps was gone for a few years.
Yeah, he came back. I think the drummer came back. Because Copes was with them when I saw them last year.
Yeah.
Because I saw them right before COVID.
Oh, they were doing the Starfish tour, anniversary tour or something.
Yeah, they were redoing Starfish. In fact, I hate saying this, but they did two sets and I left before the second set. It's like, okay, I saw Starfish. That's what I wanted to see. So I left.
That's right. I remember you telling me that.
I don't want to see the new stuff. I don't want to see your new stuff. Unless you're going to give me some heroin. I'll sit on this beanbag over here and shoot up and listen to your new stuff.
I saw a band once. It was at a little club. And I think the band was Black Tape for a Blue Girl. Which was sort of a, I don't know, real mellow gothy band.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of goth folk, I guess. I don't know exactly what you call them. I just remember they were real mellow. And instead of having like seats or anything, or like the way this venue was set up is they had an open section before the stage and like some seating behind that. Mm-hmm. But there were more normally, you know, you'd go see a band at this place and everybody'd be standing in the open section, you know, rocking out or whatever. This was so mellow that just the whole floor, people were just sitting on the floor and there were like candles everywhere and shit. And that was a very weird concert experience for me.
Yeah, I don't think I would have cared much for that.
I think that, I mean, thinking about it, I think that's the only show I have ever been to that was like that, where it was just so laid back that everybody was kind of like lounging around. They should have had beanbag chairs.
Too laid back.
Yeah.
Laid back.
That's your style?
Would you say that's my style?
Well, no. You seem kind of uptight sometimes.
Really?
Sometimes. You're uptight and out of sight, baby.
I am uptight and out of sight. People call me Stevie Wonder.
Mm-hmm. Say, Mike.
What is that? Was that Fingertips?
What?
That song.
Oh, name of it? I don't remember because all I ever remember is the chorus. I will tell you, though.
There's no email. Just check, because I knew you would ask.
I think that's just called Uptight.
Okay. Then I was wrong. I guess I revealed that I'm not, in fact, Stevie Wonder.
Oh, the full title is Uptight, and then in parentheses, Everything's All Right.
Mm. Duh.
Yeah.
That's what you get for correcting me.
Oh, you didn't know either.
Mm.
So I finished Grimm, watching Grimm. And, honestly.
I don't remember anybody asking.
I'm just telling you. I ain't waiting for you to ask me.
You've just been waiting for me to ask.
No, I ain't waiting for you to ask me.
I like the idea that you've been waiting for years.
Well, I've never seen it until just recently. I can't be waiting for years.
Why won't somebody talk to me about Grimm?
Come on, just ask.
I mean, I know I have a podcast, and I could probably do it myself, but...
I mean, I even made this button, Ask Me About Grimm.
Ask me about Grimm.
I'm wearing it right here on my chest.
Ask me about half-baked Brandon Routh.
Brandon Routh, remember?
Oh, right, yeah.
But anyway, all I was really going to say about it was that while it started out pretty rough, like Brandon Routh, it actually wound up being a decent show by the end. That's one of those weird experiences where it did take time for it to develop. Not that I'm saying that anybody should ever have to put up with watching stuff until it gets good.
If there's anybody that has developed a Stockholm syndrome with a show, it's you.
Me?
So how are we supposed to take your word for it?
Because I wasn't bitching about it as I went along, unlike Smallville.
Interesting.
Where it became a point of pride that I was still watching it, even though I hated it. God damn, that show was really stupid by the end. How's that new Lois and Superman show? Or Superman and Lois show?
It's very good.
Is it?
It's better than many of the movies that have come out, yes.
The actress playing Lois was one of the main actors on Grimm.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
That's
weird, because you have half-baked Lois and half-baked Superman in the same show?
Yeah.
That's strange!
Wait, is she half-baked Lois?
Well, she definitely looks like a alternate universe version of Marco Kidder.
I can see that, yeah.
Why she's on that show, isn't it? I mean, we can agree on that, right?
I don't know. I haven't seen it, but sure.
They definitely modeled the show off of the Christopher Reeve Superman movies.
Mm. Who's the Superman in that? It's the same actor that was in the crossover, right? The Crisis crossover.
Yeah.
It's the guy from Teen Wolf. He was the more experienced werewolf.
Okay, I haven't watched that either, but I vaguely remember.
We're looking for a more experienced werewolf.
So to follow up your watch of Grimm, you should watch Teen Wolf.
Oh. Was Teen Wolf any good? I watched a couple of episodes when it started and didn't like it.
The first three seasons?
My God, how long did it last?
And then, I want to say it went like four or five, but it started to suffer from that problem of like people going on to other shows and like main cast slowly leaving the show.
Oh, okay.
And so then they have to come up with storylines and introduce new characters that kind of take the place of those people. And then eventually the Teen Wolf finally left the show, I think. And I think they tried to do one more season or something.
You can't have a Teen Wolf without a Teen Wolf.
Yeah.
It's called Teen Wolf.
Then you'd have to call it Teen Wolf 2.
But that show fed a lot of other, like, other shows and the actors in the, like, what's his name who plays Roy in Arrow? He started on Teen Wolf.
Yeah.
Styles, is played by,
wait, it's a reimagining of the actual movie Teen Wolf? I thought it was just, so there's a Styles in it?
Oh, it's played by the guy from Maze Runner. And,
oh, man.
And he's amazing in it. He's like the best part in like the comic relief.
What are you looking at, Dick Nose?
What's his name? Dylan O'Brien.
One thing I noticed, and I don't know, maybe Teen Wolf, this happened with Teen Wolf too, is that, with Grimm, and actually with Buffy, and I guess for that matter Angel, they all suffered from, you know, scope creep, where it starts off as this nice contained thing about, you know, a certain group of people, and then all of a sudden it goes global, because like they can't just keep doing the same stories over and over, I guess, so they have to keep making them bigger and bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually you've got them fighting on, like, dealing with global problems instead of local problems, necessarily.
Yeah. Yeah, they definitely, Teen Wolf, like, definitely had a lot of, like, outside forces start coming to their small town because of the fake happenings going on there.
Yeah.
And so, like, the people becoming involved are much bigger and bigger.
I'm trying to think of a show that did that before Buffy. Because, like, I mean, you never had, like, a global scale problem in the Incredible Hulk TV show. Or something, like.
Because, like, first season of Teen Wolf is dealing all with the werewolf who turned him. And that's, like, the main antagonist of the first season. And then I think, like, second season is all dealing with werewolf hunters. Because his main love interest, family, is a family of werewolf hunters. But she doesn't know it, and she doesn't know that he's a werewolf yet. And so that deals with the conflict of that. So, like, they do, like, the first few seasons do a pretty good job of, like, only upping the ante, like, the right amount.
Yeah.
But then they start, like, bringing in, like, all these other mythologies and stuff in the later seasons that starts just getting a little weird.
I'm trying to think, like, Being Human was like that, too, where it starts off nice and contained. Of course, Being Human also had that problem of cast leaving and stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Werewolf.
Yes.
I would almost, like, I'll take that over a series taking many seasons to get into any day. If I could just watch the first three seasons and someone tell me don't watch anything after that, unless you really want to, if those first three seasons are really good,
yeah,
get right to it.
Yeah, that is better than having to sit through bad stuff to get to the good stuff. Because in a show like that, like, and using Grimm as an example, because like I said, that first season's kind of rough, but you kind of have to see it to get what's going on for the rest of it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not necessarily, but, I mean, I don't like diving into a show, like, a couple seasons in without knowing anything about it. I always feel like I'm kind of lost coming in. Fortunately, I mean, we live in an era where that's not really a problem anymore. You can watch whatever. Not like if you started watching All in the Family in season two, you know, you would never get to see season one until much later. Don't ask me why I pulled All in the Family as an example, but anyway. But yeah, I can't really think of a show before Buffy that had that kind of scope creep problem.
You're a scope creep. You're a creep that drinks scope.
Did X-Files have that problem?
Well, I mean, X-Files was always sort of about global shit, but I think they kind of did, yeah. I think they kind of had that problem where, like, you found out more about the shadow agencies and it kept growing. Like, but I don't know if it was, like, yeah, I don't know. And I guess probably shows, supernatural type shows anyway, lend themselves towards apocalypse or apocalyptic events.
Supernatural.
Yeah, Supernatural. I mean, that's another one that had a giant scope creep. Which worked for that show, though, because it started out as a... Say what?
I want to draw the scope creep now.
Yeah.
When you say that, I think of those... what were those monsters? Like, they draw the giant monsters on the tiny hot rod cars?
Oh, yeah, the Rat Fink?
Yeah, like Rat Fink.
Scope creep and Rat Fink?
Mm-hmm. So it'd be a giant cartoony monster with a little tiny bottle of scope? No, I don't know. Something. Traveler's bottle of scope, maybe? But, anywho. So, I got to talk about Grandmama right now.
Groom.
Mm-hmm. You betcha. Oh, yeah. I am checking. Anybody got anything in stores this week there?
No.
No.
Nothing. Half the studio left in the middle of this.
Yeah, they don't like me very much.
Disappear.
It's just it's one of those things. So I entered the sweepstakes in Ohio to try to win $1 million for getting vaccinated.
How much are you going to give me?
I don't know. What do they?
Give me $2.
What do you estimate? Like between 30% and 40% in taxes when you're self-employed?
Yeah, I guess.
So they take the, they consider that income because they issue you a 1099, and I think they take it off the top when they when you win a lottery like that.
Woof. Yeah.
So I think they take that off the top. So probably you're only going to get like, you know, 600, 700 grand, which I say only. I mean, you know, I don't know if I've made that in my lifetime yet.
Sure you have.
Have I?
I don't know.
I mean, when I started working, minimum wage was like $3.
Good God. I don't know what my first job paid. I feel like it was like $4, though.
You were in different.
Maybe?
I think let me think. In Ohio in 1992, and that wasn't even my first job. That was just my first steady job once I graduated high school. But I think I was making, it was like $3.11 or something like that, $3.12.
Mm.
And it was minimum wage, so whatever minimum wage was at the time, but I think it was like three something. And then when I was a kid in grade school, I worked at a garden center and I only made like a buck and a half an hour.
Stop bragging.
And they could get away with that.
All the money you made when you were a little kid.
I didn't make a lot of money. I'm telling you how little it was, Mike. You're misinterpreting me as usual.
You had so much money compared to the other kids.
No, not really. But
all I ever hear is how rich you were in grade school.
I was pretty damn poor, Mike.
Oh, man.
Man.
Nothing but gabbing about all the monies.
How is it you always misconstrue me?
Big spender crank.
One would think you do it on purpose.
One would think that I know that you have a chip on your shoulder about growing up poor and keeps needling you about it.
Well, I did hate growing up poor. It pretty much sucked.
I loved growing up poor.
I'm not one of those people that thinks being poor is a character builder.
I loved it. Every single thing about it was great.
Yeah, it ruled. I mean, I wasn't as poor as some people.
Yeah.
And I was richer in spirit than some others.
Do you think...
Is this like, would you rather?
Yeah.
Okay.
Would you rather have grown up that way or grown up like me and be living beyond your means because your dad was a con artist? And you were actually poor, but weren't living poor, and then the piper came to call when you're in high school.
I probably like you because, you know, at least you had fun for a while.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
I mean, we weren't always dirt poor. You know, we had some good Christmases and shit like that.
Mm-hmm.
Which I guess in contrast does make the times when we were dirt poor like felt that much worse. But still, I'd rather have the good times too, as well.
I love good times as well.
Good times.
Would you say that you are the JJ of your family?
I don't think so.
So you're, what's his name? The little brother. What's the little brother's name? Why can't I remember him?
I don't remember, Mike.
The smart one.
Speaking of con man car salesman, though, that's kind of what I, when they announced the lottery here, the vaccine lottery,
mm-hmm.
The statement, the way the governor was talking, like, oh, I know people are going to call me crazy. I'm like, what is this guy? Is he selling used cars on Saturday or something? Like,
they're calling me crazy.
His language was very car salesman.
What if the lottery was like the book The Lottery?
Like Shirley Jackson?
Is it Shirley Jackson that wrote it?
The one where they have to choose who dies?
Yeah.
Well, that would suck. If this was all just a big trick to get us all registered to die? All in the name of getting vaccinated? Wait a minute. There's a plot hole here. But yeah, that would suck. Are you jealous because your state doesn't have a vaccine lottery?
A little bit. I'd like to win money.
You so jelly.
Money helps things.
Money does help things. Like, I could pay off my parents' mortgage.
That would be nice of you. I used to dream about doing that, too.
I would like to do that. By the way, from Blue Juice Comics, and Bonnie number 10 is in stores today.
Now he's bragging about all the work he has.
Why do you say that, Mike? What is the deal with you doing that? I would
first,
announce...
talking about being poor.
I would announce your titles in stores, too.
He's back. He didn't die.
Well, that's good.
Shock saying he liked Deep Space Nine. Had to walk it off.
Are you? Did you enter the lottery in Ohio for the vaccine? You didn't?
I didn't even know how to do that. I mean, I don't think it's a bad idea. I wouldn't.
Is that where you got your vaccine?
No.
I think you have to be an Ohio resident to.
Pam got hers there. But yeah, I think she has to be a resident.
I'm gonna win. I'm gonna win me $1 million.
I hope you do. I really do. I would love for you to win.
I'm a winning.
You're way more deserving than Craig.
I think so. And I'm not even being a jerk about it.
I'm a winning.
You are a
winner. You're a wiener.
You are a wiener.
A wiener dog.
You have to buy me a present, though, if you win.
Okay.
Now, that just means it could be like a snow globe, like I get for you.
I can get you another guitar.
Well, you don't have to go that far.
Like you really need it.
Get one of those like $14 little tiny ones, little recreations on Amazon.
Like you really need another guitar, is what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. That's why it was funny. Yeah, that's why it was funny.
Mm-hmm.
Also from Oni Press.
Don't you have 30? You have 30 guitars. Stop talking about me.
That's sort of a non-argument. You can't compare yourself to me and make it any better, Mike. I mean, that's like saying, you know, at least I'm not as much of a junkie as this junkie. But, you know, you're still a junkie. Like,
but not as much as
that. Right. I mean, I guess in degrees you're not as junkie-ish. I mean, you are kind of a guitar junkie, though.
I'm not as much as I was last year. I've chilled out. I'm much more about learning. I would, if I got to the point that I have in my head where I can improvise and play okay, then all bets are off. I'll start buying guitars again.
I've got to say it's been at least a year since I bought a guitar. So,
I don't think I deserve another guitar. I think I had a moment of midlife crisis insanity and bought a bunch of guitars. I still have two of Josh's guitars at my house. one I didn't finish fixing.
Hey, they sell some pretty cheap fret kits, like fret care kits. On Amazon,
mm-hmm.
Like where you get a nice little soft hammer and some fret files and stuff like that.
Fret files I could use. I'm not gonna fuck with frets. I'm not gonna put new frets on.
No, but I'm saying, you know, you can get the rough edges off the edges and stuff.
Yeah, that's what I've been doing with my crappy Squier that I had.
And you'd be surprised how much that actually helps, just to not have a rough edge on the bottom there, grabbing your skin.
Yeah, it's nice to not cut your fingers every time you move up and down the neck.
Yeah, very.
Pretty much, yeah.
You do?
Yeah,
I do. I use very light gauge on my guitar.
Really? Like what, 8s?
No, 9.
No, that's pretty, yeah. I'm an 11s person myself.
That's insane to me.
Well, acoustics are usually like 13s.
Yeah.
He doesn't even have fingers.
You don't bend on a guitar, on an acoustic.
Like hell, you don't.
You don't.
I do.
It doesn't happen a lot.
I bend on acoustics. A lot of blues people bend it on acoustics.
Yeah.
Just because you're wrong.
Mike?
Most people use 10s, I'm guessing, I think.
I think probably. I mean,
average.
I know some, you know, a lot of.
13s, I think.
I think my friend Brian always uses 10s now. He used to be a 9s and an 8s guy when he thought that helped his shredding.
Oh, it's not about shredding. It's about how easy it is to bend.
I just don't like, how lighter gauges don't stay in tune as well for me.
Mm.
So, plus, I mean, I'm coming, you know, I'm a bass player too, so I'm used to thick strings.
Yeah, I haven't had the problem of staying in tune.
I mean, I bend my bass strings too, so I don't know what kind of problem you're having with know, a mere 11 or something. I mean, geez, dude. What, you got little delicate
11?
Fingers?
I haven't touched an 11. I don't like 10s.
Yeah. You got little delicate fingers, little baby fingers?
I'm used to the 10s. I have 10s on my SG.
Yeah, you need some thick strings on that SG, man. It's got a rock. Thick ass strings, man. Put some 12s on there.
I don't like.
You can't have horns and thin strings.
I don't like. That doesn't make sense. I don't like bending 10s. I'm getting better at it, obviously. I also haven't ruled out the idea of putting 9s on that.
You need to get yourself one of those grip masters and practice your finger strength.
Always use 9s. It's what I'm comfortable with.
Fine. Be that way. Baby fingers.
You know what? It's what the person put on them when I first bought my guitar, and now that we're talking, I realize that it's probably because they thought I was a young kid who hadn't played guitar yet, and that's why they put 9s on it.
Well, that makes sense, yeah.
Well,
I mean, I got to admit, lighter gauges are easier to play, but, you know.
I think it's fine.
Well, if you're fine with it, I'm fine with it, Mike.
You're not going to make me feel like less of a man.
I'm not, baby fingers.
Because that ship has sailed.
I'm not, besides, you know, whatever. Whatever works for you. Baby fingers.
Baby fingers.
That's your new blues name. It's Mike Baby Fingers Norton.
I think it was 13s that they used, that he used. 12s or 12?
Who?
Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was reading an interview with his guitar tech.
Well, he was a bendy mofo.
Yeah. He would have, like, he had super jumbo frets, and he used 13s, and I think by the end of a tour, they'd have to refret the guitar.
Oh, I bet. Man, wear them, you know. I mean, frets are only nickel, unless they put steel frets in.
Yeah, he had to do some, like, super industrial work on that guitar, apparently.
Oh, dang it, there's an ant on my ceiling.
How can you see an ant on your ceiling?
I'm looking at it. Because it's a white ceiling and a dark ant. I mean, how do you miss it? You know? Oh, what a feeling. There's ants on my ceiling. Anyway. So, all right. So, yeah, Oni Press. Jonna and the Unpossible Monsters, number 3, is in stores this week. So.
Go buy all the Crank's comics is what we're saying.
I'm just trying to do the promotion. If you had something in there, I'd say it too.
That Jonna book is good, so people should buy it.
Yeah, they should.
Not like the other comics.
It's a fun book, good art, good colors. I dig it. And, yeah, so that's it as far as I can see. And since nobody else is telling me they have anything in stores, I guess that's it for all of us.
I don't think I do.
I got stuff in stores.
Yeah? What you got in store?
The other day I was there and I left my hat.
Dang. Now you hatless.
No, hatless.
Hatless Josh Emmons and Mike Baby Fingers Norton.
Hatless Shrugs.
Hatless Shrugs.
They call me.
They call me Hatless Shrugs.
Right on.
Hatless Shrugs and Baby Fingers this fall.
It's in the lost and found though, so if you're at the store, maybe go and get it for me.
He's not going to tell you which store, though.
Just go to any store and ask for Josh Emmons' hat. They'll know. Oh, they'll know. All right, so I got to get this ant.
He's just got to put on his whole rig to get up to the top of the ceiling.
No, I'm...
It's going to be like a fleck of something.
This isn't an ant at all.
It's not on the ceiling anymore. Crawl down the wall. I could see it. It's crawling around. I want to get it before it goes someplace hiding. Hiding.
We'll go. Bye.
So, yeah, you can reach us at crankcast.net, crankcast.com, crankcast@gmail.com. Mike's website is ihatemike.com, Addison's at addisonduke.com. You can go read Battlepug at battlepug.com. I don't know what Emmons' website is anymore. It's been a long time.
Your website.
Oh, I don't got one.
Okay. So, have a good weekend and take care of yourselves.
Don't tell me what to do.